This is Lady Sinea, and you're listening to Guildcast, the only show that warns you, unless you need to kill the boss that's been rumored to lurk in that area, don't follow the little white bunny! It's got sharp, pointy teeth! Run away! Run away! Take a look!
Everyone, welcome back to this 85th episode of Guildcast for November 6, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. As I said in the last episode, I wanted to do something special for this show, if everything went according to plans, right? But I'm sorry to say that they actually did not. This was supposed to be a video episode, where a few of us got together to do a dungeon. We did the Ooze Pit, but I had several technical difficulties that actually prevented that from happening, and it was pretty annoying. Sparing you the gory details, basically what happened was the footage I recorded was at the maximum quality and size. So, you know, I'm capturing this full 21-inch screen, you know, video capture, and it just got really large and just way unmanageable. The actual total file size was about 200 gigabytes, and that was just too much for my computer to handle as far as editing. I was able to do a little bit, and then it would crash, and I shortened it down. And this is an hour's worth of footage here. So I messed with it a little bit. Didn't really work. So I'm going to postpone that for another time. What I'm going to do, though, in the meantime on this episode is I still have a special treat for you. And what this will be is another rant episode, much like the infamous episode 63. Except this time I figured I wouldn't use explicit language. What I'm going to do is beat myself out, which I think is usually funnier anyway, in my opinion. But the topic is the top 10 things I hate about Guild Wars. Or an alternative title is the top 10 shit that's f***ing up this game. So I hope you enjoy it. I also have a nice rant from Lady Sinea concerning Guild Wars 2, and then one by Slash concerning PvP. So you're sure to hear it all here today. So let's go over the people who asked to be mentioned this week. They include Ryan Doomcaster, Earth Haze from Guardians of Anubis, Pollux the Righteous, Jade the Vanguard, and a special shout-out to Trickster's mini-pets, Saphira, Ichigo, and Itch. So, about this 2-year Guildcast birthday party that I mentioned last episode. Can you believe it's been 2 years? Seriously, I still can't. But what I'm going to do this year is it's going to be on 2 nights instead of 1 night. You know, one specific time, so that way more people can actually have the opportunity to attend, hopefully. The first night will be on Saturday, November 17th, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the Great Temple of Balthazar, International District 2, if there is one, which I think usually on a Saturday night there are at least 2 districts. And then the second night will be the following night, on Sunday, November 18th, this time at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, in the same location, Great Temple of Balthazar, International District 2. I know both of these times are fairly late for the European and Australian listeners, but that's literally the only times I'd have available on that weekend. I'll probably be taking some videos, and I'm not sure if I'll make an actual birthday video like I did last year, but I also want to take a lot of screenshots and some group screenshots. So if you're there, we're going to try to get together and just have like a big old, you know, like a class photo or something of all of us there. As for events, we have some fun stuff in store both nights. I'll be doing the same thing for both nights. There will be Guildcast trivia, where you can win prizes for knowing your Guildcast shows. There will be open trade racing, which is an idea that was originally told to me by, Anya told me this one, one of my officers, Anya, and she said that she heard about it from Solid Smurf, who's also in my guild. And what it is where people will basically race to try to catch me in town. Like, I'll run around town, and they have to try to catch me and try to find me and get to me first, and the first one to get to me and actually open trade will be the one who gets the prize. And I'll do this probably a few times, at least on each night. I'm sure we'll also do some things like sink dancing and some virtual drunkenness, although I won't be passing out any booze this year, because last year I did that, and it took up most of my time, if not all of my time, just handing out, you know, the booze to everyone. So I guess it'll be kind of a BYOB thing, although I might still give out some, but, you know, don't try to open trade with me, unless we're in the open trade race. But for the prizes, what I wanted to do, some unique things, and a couple of listeners have thrown this idea out there on the forums, and I've had this idea before, but what I want to do is I want to give away some autographed holiday hats. I guess autographed would be in quotes, because what it would be is I'm going to make the festival hats from my Mesmer Guildcast, and then I'll give those away as prizes. So you're going to get these hats that say, you know, customized for Guildcast, and you can only get them from, you know, from me at this event. So I think that's kind of cool. Also, I'll be giving away some, you know, valuable prizes, some actual valuable prizes like mini pets. There'll be some holiday items, maybe some rare ones that were kind of hard to get. I'll give away, and then also, of course, you know, the cash prizes I'll give away. So I hope everyone can make it for at least one of these nights, maybe even both of these nights. You know, feel free to attend both. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. And don't forget also that the 19th is not only Guildcast's birthday, but it's also Lady Sinea's birthday. So be sure to wish her a happy 21st birthday again. The big get-together we did last weekend turned out pretty well, I think. It's not quite the turnout that I'd hoped for, but I only really mentioned it once on the show, and it was kind of a late notice, so I guess that's understandable. But if you were there that night, look for yourself to be in the next Guildcast Theater episode, which is episode 6, which should be out pretty soon. I'm hoping by the end of this week. Lately, I've had some issues with my Skype recording program and its compatibility with Vista, or lack of compatibility, and I've noticed a few people have attempted to leave a voicemail, but the voicemails aren't being saved for some reason. So if you've called in the last 2 or 3 weeks and left a voicemail, just try it again. Hopefully the latest update will fix some of the problems that I've had. I also wanted to take a little bit of time and mention an email conversation that I had recently with some members of a guild collective known as Lazy Nation. You may have heard of them, and I'm sure you've at least seen their guild tag around, which is capital L, little a, capital Z, little y, for lazy. But what they are is supposedly the largest Guild Wars guild out there, with about 950 members currently, and they have a goal of reaching 1,200 and more over at least 12 guilds very soon. They've been the Guild of the Week in April of last year, or actually April of this year. They were Guild of the Month in the Beckett Massive Online Gamer Magazine, issue 7. They were mentioned in an article by AMD ATI's website as putting the guild in Guild Wars. So this guild has really been recognized for some of their amazing achievements. And I had heard of them from a few of my guildies and some friends. And, you know, you notice their tag is everywhere, like I said. And it kind of gets them noticed, and you wonder about them a little bit. But it was always something like, yeah, that guild, Lazy Nation, they're just going for numbers. They accept anyone, and they do it just for the sake of being huge. So that was always in the back of my mind. Not really another thought was given about it. It was just not really negative, but not so much positive either. Well, that's until their public relations manager, yeah, they have a public relations manager for a guild. How cool is that? His name is Matt, and he contacted me in an effort to get the word out that they're trying to polish their image a little bit. Now, it's understandable how a guild like this can easily get written off as not so serious because of that numbers goal that they have, but I've discovered that that's not really the case at all. He says, and I quote, "We really have a passion for keeping a guild that not only has a respectable size, but a respectable member base as well. Every one of our members is required to log in every week and remain active in the community. As a result, we have maintained a standard that keeps our members happy, active, and involved." So I responded to Matt, and I let him know that I ordinarily don't mention guild-related news on my show. Otherwise, you know, this would be called Recruitcast or something like that. But I was really pleasantly surprised at the efforts and the professionalism that this guild represents. So then I got another email from Mark, who is the leader of the guilds of Lazy Nation. And he was happy to hear that the message that they're trying to portray through this public relations is actually getting through. He was happy to hear, you know, in my response to the public relations manager, that I understand what, you know, where they're coming from now. And it's not really, you know, this contact back and forth wasn't because I was bad-mouthing them or anything like that. You know, I had this thought in mind that I think a lot of people had in mind about this group just because of their numbers. But it was just a coincidence that I had heard of them and not really thought highly of them before this. And then I get this email. I think that was kind of a coincidence. But I think it goes to show that they're aware, as Mark even said himself, of the stained reputation that they have or had. And this is something that they're really working hard to overcome. Now, you're probably wondering why I'm spending so much time in this podcast talking about this guild. No, they're not paying me or anything like that. It's just, I think that this guild is a great representation of what a true community is in this game. Sure, it might be hard to have a more personal relationship with your guildies and alliance mates when there are almost 1,000 of you, but I think the fact that they're approaching this as they do, with keeping it active and mature, since I don't know if I mentioned, but it's an 18 and over guild, that right there, it just says a lot for their commitment. And personally, I think it's just to be respected. Mark also invited me to check out their vent server sometime and be a guest of their guild, so I'm definitely going to do that. I certainly look forward to that, because I'm dying to see what it's like to have 100 people on vent at one time. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about this guild, you can check them out at Lazy Imperium, LazyImperium.com. And for one more little tidbit of guild-related news, this one is about my own guild, Guildcast Listeners United. I just wanted to mention really quick that we recently changed the rules around a little bit. We're now an 18 and over guild. Plus, we've instilled some new rules regarding party etiquette and general immaturity. I really hope it helps to make the guild a more serious gaming guild, which, yes, I realize that it's a bit different from what it was originally created for, but love it or hate it, we're just heading in a different direction now. I want to make people aware of that if they plan to submit an application, which, of course, you can get by sending a blank email to join@guildcast.com. And let me point out, not by PMing me in-game asking me to join. We also recently got another guild in the Alliance, making 5 altogether. So, hi to Val and all the members of Invictus Anima, and I really hope I pronounced that right. So now on to the real meat of this show that I've been looking forward to doing for a long time now. Remember, this episode is meant to be humorous, but not really kidding. You know, like when your friends tell you that they think you're an idiot, and then they laugh and say, just kidding? Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. So if you have a stick up your ass about me making fun of Guild Wars, either don't listen to this episode or call a doctor immediately, because that can't be healthy or comfortable. Now this list is in reverse order, from the things that bother me a little bit to the things that bother me the most, so keep that in mind. And oh, did I mention yet that this is only my opinion? Yeah, I think I have to say that because this is only my opinion. Got it? Okay. So starting with number 10 of the things I hate most about Guild Wars is the end of Guild Wars 1. Again, being number 10, this isn't a huge thing for me, but I think it's just kind of sad, you know? It's like the end of an era. Granted, Guild Wars 1 isn't actually ending. They're still supporting it and stuff like that, but with Guild Wars 2 coming out, it makes you really wonder if fans will flock to this new version or if they will, shun it or whatever. I don't know if it's going to take everyone. I don't imagine it will, because I know there's a lot of people who are hardcore still into Guild Wars 1, and they're not going anywhere. Yeah, it includes me. But I suspect that these hardcore veterans will, they'll stick with Tyria because that's what brought them to the game in the first place. You know, you have the instanced world, you have the level 20 cap, you have everything that made the Guild Wars franchise the success that it is today. But then, you know, you get the people who welcome the changes that will be implemented in Guild Wars 2. You know, so far we've heard that there might not be a level cap. There will be persistent worlds. There won't be instance worlds. And it seems like there's a lot of things that will be brought into Guild Wars 2 that are in every other MMO out there. Now, I'm actually interested in Guild Wars 2 myself. I'm interested in at least finding out what it's like. You know, I enjoy some of these things that they talk about. You know, they want people to be able to run and swim, because that's something you can't do in Guild Wars. You know, you can do it in every other MMO out there just about, but in Guild Wars there's that restriction. But still, you know, it'll be sad to see Guild Wars as we know it today be called Guild Wars 1. You know, the game that was considered beyond their capacity to fix, so much so that they had to make a sequel to do it again the right way or whatever. So, number 9. Random hunt bonuses in Eye of the North. Again, this isn't a huge hatred of mine, but it's just annoying when some people in your party might be rank 4 while others are still rank 1 for no apparent reason. It's like you're doing the same thing, killing the same exact f***ing monsters, but getting rewarded differently. It just seems, well, I hate the word unfair, but it just seems unbalanced, so I'll just say that. Alright, so number 8, grinding for titles. For those of you who started this game when it first launched, or sometime close, like me, remember how this game was originally supposed to be anti-grinding? People were so tired of grinding in EverQuest or WoW, so Guild Wars is going to be the change to all that. It was going to be the alternative. So my question is, what happened? I think we first saw this to some degree in factions, with faction reward points, where you needed to grind in AB, or you had to grind those repeatable quests to gain 10,000 Kurzic or Luxon points in order to progress through the storyline once you got to the House Suhelter or Cavalon, right? So this was part of the storyline. It was actually something you needed to do to progress in the game. And then we saw this again in Nightfall. This grinding continues for Sunspear points, which again are part of the storyline. Now, I know that when Nightfall first came out, and at other times on the show, I've mentioned how I don't really mind the grinding so much because they make it fun. Well, this is true to some degree. And you know, when the game first comes out, everything is exciting. So when you're grinding, you're like, hell, I don't care. I'll grind. This is awesome. You know, look at the background. Look at the scenery. This is great. You know, the first time is fun. The second time gets old. And by the third time, you want to chop someone's f***ing balls off. It's this type of design that makes you want to create one character and stick with that one character instead of creating several characters, which is exactly what I love to do. It was always fun to me to be able to play whatever character I wanted in any certain situation, depending on what my friends and my guildies needed in their party. Well, not anymore. Title grinding and, to a lesser extent, I guess, outfitting heroes has really ruined the fun of having so many alts. And to me, that seems like a bad business model, especially since they're selling character slots in the online store. So now we have Eye of the North, right? We have not only title grinding again, but we also have 4 separate storylines where you grind titles for each one of them. Okay, I'll admit, you don't really need to grind in Eye of the North like you did in Nightfall and Factions. But even though it's not part of the storyline as much as the others, it's mainly for the armor and special weapons and special consumables that give you, basically they give you a gameplay advantage over your other players if you get these consumables. Now the armor and the weapons don't, well, some of the weapons might, but the point is it's still part of the grinding for the titles and it gives an advantage over other players. So let's go to number 7. No organized in-game way to buy or sell items. For example, no auction house. Now, it's not so much that I'm a big buyer and seller. You know, this one's number 7. It bothers me a little bit more than the other ones, but it's still not a huge deal. My biggest complaint is that local chat is just filled up with these want-to-buy and want-to-sell spam messages. No matter how hard ArenaNet tries to redirect the spam by filtering the WTB or the WTS into party search or the trade channel automatically, still we get those moronic f***heads who insist on doing workarounds so that their crap is seen in local chat and wherever else they feel like, you know, they want to put it. They put w.t.b, or, you know, they make a cute little W sign out of slashes and stuff, you know. Hey, dumb f***, stop spamming local chat. No one likes you. Seriously, no one likes you. And no one's going to buy your shit because they don't want to see you spamming up local chat with your shit. Okay, so number 6. Recycled environments, pets, and armor. This one bothers me a lot. Maybe it shouldn't, because I don't really hear too many other people complaining about this, but for me, it's really annoying. You want some examples? Okay. Polar bear equals black bear, but white. Mountain eagle equals raven equals phoenix equals rainbow phoenix. No way, Sean. Rainbow phoenix is bigger and has more frilly things dangling from it. Okay, well, you got me there. I'll give you that one. Rainbow phoenix is kind of awesome. But it's still basically the same, you know, animation and everything like that. They just reskinned it. Okay, so I'll keep going. We got the flamingo, which equals the crane. We got the dune lizard, which equals the iguana. The albino rat equals a rat that just doesn't get out much. The moa bird equals the strider. The stalker equals lioness, which equals the lion and the lynx. Oh, and don't even get me started on those f***ing crabs. How many different colors of those things can they make and still try to pass them off as a new pet? So, my point on the pets is made, I think. But what about environments? Okay, have you ever been in a dungeon yet? Yeah? Have you been in 2 dungeons yet? What's that? You don't remember because they all look exactly the f***ing same? Yeah. Okay, now armor. Let's talk about armor, shall we? Wow, that Asuran male warrior looks great, doesn't he? Seems a bit familiar, though, doesn't it? Kind of, I don't know, Kurziki? Granted, there aren't as many repeats in armor as the other things I mentioned. Still, you know, you see these things that are, it seems like they're going, well, I don't have any leggings for this, you know, we can't think of any leggings, so let's just grab some from Tyria, throw them in there, and maybe, you know, change it a little bit, and no one will notice. Well, this actually brings me to my number 5, which is progressively crappier armor. This is number 5 because I feel so strongly about armor for my characters. Actually, there's 2 reasons why this is number 5, because it's right smack dab in the middle. I'm just one of those people who enjoys looking good in the game, you know, almost as much as I enjoy poning. But recently, I wanted to get some new armor for my male mesmer, right? So I hop onto the official Guild Wars wiki, I check out the screenshots of every set of armor from Prophecies to Eye of the North for the male mesmer. And I realize that some of it is just complete shit. You know, you have the marching band outfit, and then you have that Asuran armor. Holy fuck, what is up with that? So what I decided to do was I just went back and I got some 15k enchanters, which is in Marhan's Grotto, Tyrian armor. And, you know, I love it. I love that old armor because everything it seems like they're making now is just crap. Let me clarify that though, because like I said, the reason this is number 5 is because it's smack dab in the middle. There's armor that I completely hate that I look at and I say, what the f*** is that? And then there's the armor that I have to admit is just downright gorgeous. And I know this is supposed to be a rant show and I'm not supposed to, you know, equal it out with saying that I like certain parts of it, but it's just a shame that since factions, you know, we have the Necros, the Mesmers, and the Rangers who've just been f***ing the ass repeatedly. And not in a good way. But, you know, admittedly, they have given some of the classes some really nice looking armor. I think male warriors have gotten really great looking armor, just across the board. Well, it goes for female warriors too. Warriors across the board have gotten great looking armor. I think Ellies have gotten great looking armor. Monks, you know, it's kind of half and half. But, man, what is up with the Necro, Mesmer, and Ranger crap? Somebody needs to get on that right away. Actually, you know, it's funny. I sit here and rant about this, but I feel bad because I actually, when I was in Seattle at PAX, and I got to see all the people from ArenaNet, I got to see the person who, she was talking about how she's the one who designs the armor, and I feel bad because she looked like such a nice girl, you know, she looked like such a, a kind person, and here she is doing her job, and I'm bitching about it. But it's just, you know, it's my opinion. It's just what I think. And I who knows if other people agree with me. I know to some extent people agree with me, especially about the necro armor. You know, you got the fish scales and stuff like that, and people are like, what the f***? But, again, that's my opinion. So let me just get down to number 4 before I go on any more about that. All right, so number 4, dumbing down of controls. For example, only pressing spacebar to attack next target. This is kind of a general dumbing down of the game that I've seen, you know, probably within the last year or so. Now, you would think that something like this has made it easier to concentrate on the real things that matter, like which skill to use next or, you know, something like that, but that's not the case at all. What it does is it makes it so that people can now tell complete stories about their day at school or, oh my God, guess what Trisha said the other day? And then they can still act like they're being productive in a party situation while they're telling these complete stories. Seriously, how can you tell a complete story to everyone in the party while still trying to, you know, battle with the limitations of the text input box? And then there's the fact that you're supposed to be clicking on skills and stuff like that, you know? Well, I'm answering my own question here because I know how they can do that. It's because everything is being dumbed down. All you have to do is press space, you know, you press spacebar. So then you can continue on with your conversation about, you know, how Lisa took your lip gloss or whatever. Seriously, people, the Yahoo chat rooms are that way. So let's go on to number 3. The hero AI not up to par with monster AI. For example, we have Elias who stands in Firestorm and doesn't move. Now, if I cast Firestorm on a group of Char, you can bet your ass they're going to move out of the way. And then we have Zed and Milani who, you know, they think maybe it might be kind of cool to run over on that side of the map and maybe, you know, let's aggro some of those guys and bring them over. You know, we already fight in a group and that's cool, but hey, we got some more Char over here. Let's go grab them. We can have a big party. No, Zed, Milani, Koss, the other dumb f***s, don't do that anymore. Seriously. Monster AI doesn't randomly see things out of their aggro circle and run up to it like the hero AI does. Well, except for there's a couple exceptions to this. There's the spotters, the Cornyn spotters, and then there's the siege devourers, which can... those things can see on the other side of the map. It's really amazing. But, you know, my problem is, what is with the insanity of these heroes? Can we get, like, an upgrade or something, please? I really want my Koss 2.0. Okay, well, this brings us to our next one, which is number 2. Getting closer. Number 2 is PvP and PvE skills trying to be equal. I think nerfing a skill because it's overpowered in PvP is unfair to PvE players, and vice versa. Just because some noob spams spirits all day doesn't mean that we need to nerf all good spirits. We don't create a new class, like a ritualist, then make it kick so much ass that people will want to play it in your otherwise shitty new chapter, factions, then later on nerf all that class's good skills so that these people are stuck with ritualists that, you know, aren't as effective as they used to be. That's going to piss a lot of people off. And the same goes for assassins. I'm not just picking on ritualists here. And I'm not saying ritualists are worthless either. Don't start writing me emails about it. But what happens is, you know, they make these new classes, they make them kick so much ass, and then they start deciding that, hey, they're kicking too much ass. We need to lower the ass kickery a little bit and make them up to par with, you know, everything else that's been nerfed. So my advice, look out Paragons and Dervishes, because you're next. The Dervishes, though, are still the oh my God, I'm the farming class right now, and people can't believe how awesome it is that they can farm anything with a Dervish. Well, just wait. And seriously, don't even get me started on that soul reaping nerf. I still cry myself to sleep over that one. But the bottom line here is that PvP does not equal PvE. They are two different things. Different strategies, different approaches, different outcomes, everything. I realize that one of the initial grabs of this game was to merge PvE and PvP, but in my opinion, it's not working as effectively as it should. Now, sure, you know, we have the people who have never PvP'd before, and then they, you know, they never probably would have until they played this game. So then they jump into a random arena to see what it's like, and they find out they love it, and they become really good at it. Well, that's great. Seriously, that's awesome, and that's what it was intended to be. But I think games these days are getting away from this integrated system. For example, look at the game Fear. This is a PvP-only game. So you know exactly what you're getting yourself into when you buy this game, as well as in most MMOs when there's a separate server for PvE and PvP, and then there's one for RPing and, you know, things like that. They separate it because they know that for the most part, again, I'm not saying this for everybody, but for the most part, PvPers want nothing to do with PvE and everything associated with it. And I think that's fair. I think if a PvPer tells me to go back to PvE because I bring my 15k armor into Heroes Ascent, that's fair, you know. But more to my point that I started here that I've strayed from, even if people want to do both, even if people want to PvE and PvP, the skills of one shouldn't affect the skills of another. The f***ing end. So now that brings us to the number one thing that I hate about Guild Wars, or that I think is f***ing up this game. And that is the Survivor title. But more specifically, the Leechers who use this title to skate through the game and then disconnect the second they get attacked. Nothing pisses me off more than anyone, Survivor or not, using a group to get through a mission with zero input from them. Now, this is nothing directly against the title itself. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to get a flooded inbox with people saying, oh my god, I have a Survivor title. Why do you hate it so much? No. It's not the title itself. It's the fact that this title acts as an enabler for leechers and lazy f***heads to get a title that is otherwise very difficult to get legitimately. I have the greatest respect for someone who got their Survivor title soloing or otherwise participating in a group, by, you know, being extra careful to avoid aggro, knowing when to run, when they need to run back, things like that. If as long as they're still participating in the group and they can genuinely earn that title, that is great. That is exactly how it should be, and I think that's exactly why it was made. But let me give you a tip here. If you're going for the Survivor title and you're in a group and you're in my group and you run forward and aggro and then you disconnect, when you get hit one time, I'm gonna f***ing stick my f***ing foot up your motherfucking ass. What you need to do is you need to go triple F with some heroes or something like that if the title means that much to you. But don't make everyone else's life hell because you want to feel special one day with a shiny new title. Oh, and one more thing.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street. In April of 2005, I fell in love with a cooperative online role-playing game called Guild Wars. It made no attempts to be just another MMORPG, and in fact, it worked very hard to make a name for itself as its own type of game, going even so far as billing itself as a CORPG. It wanted to ensure that the gaming community saw it as something distinctly different, because it was. Through instancing, Guild Wars was able to eliminate some of the frustrating gameplay elements commonly associated with MMOs, such as spawn camping, loot stealing, and standing in a queue in order to complete a quest. Guild Wars is also a skill-based game, as opposed to level-based or equipment-based. That means you don't have to grind hundreds of hours in order to be competitive. The average player has just as much chance of being competitive as one who has more time to play online. Also, being a skill-based game, the variety of gameplay styles can vary greatly. It is feasible to play only one or two classes and never get bored, because there are so many different builds that you can try out, not to mention also pairing up the skills of your primary with your many different secondary classes that are available to you. Guild Wars is set up so that people who are in different areas of the world can still play with one another. Even if your friend plays on a different continent, you can meet and party up in international districts. There are no huge, required in-game money sinks in Guild Wars. a player can, with relative ease, obtain equipment equivalent to, or nearly so, to those rare skins or special armors which someone else has farmed for. Travel takes very little time in Guild Wars. You can travel instantaneously between continents and between outposts using map travel, rather than wasting all of your game time with tediously long travel times. There is so much that is good in Guild Wars. There is so much to do. I still haven't finished Eye of the North, because I've been PvPing, playing in Cantha, slaughtering Char, trying out new builds on my characters, and in general just enjoying myself. I don't need some random grinding added to the game in order to give me something to do. Please tell me, why in the world would I spend my gaming hours in a time waster that just annoys me? Heck, I'd rather listen to Danica and Togo have a conversation than... Well, no, actually, I take it back. I would not prefer that, but you get the idea. It has been said that some of the newer parts of Guild Wars and the rumored changes that will be in Guild Wars 2 will destroy the game, and are already ruining the experience. I believe that attention and focus must be brought back to what has made Guild Wars great, what has made it such a phenomenon, and what keeps us coming back for more. Guild Wars announced, 22 April 2003. We're very excited to announce ArenaNet's first title. In today's press release, NCSoft and ArenaNet collaboratively announced Guild Wars, an online role-playing game that we hope will define a new high watermark for internet play. The game is designed from the ground up to offer balanced competitive play in addition to cooperative adventuring. It's built on ArenaNet's unique streaming technology, which allows players to enjoy all the latest game features. And all this without taking a chunk out of your wallet every month, like so many existing internet games. Our goal from the beginning was to create a game that rewards gamers for their skill, rather than just for the number of hours they spent playing. At the same time, we wanted to enable balanced long-term competitive play, and avoid many of the problems found in other role-playing games, including the endless traveling, the loot stealing, the spawn camping, and the boring line-up-and-take-a-number process often required to get a quest reward. We've done some of that by giving each party its own copy of the mission. You can meet up with friends in an outpost, and then head off to your own instance of the world, assuring an exciting quest and a fair division of the spoils. Guild Wars takes place in a fantasy world, where guilds of characters of a wide range of professions can make a mark on history. The reason we chose the fantasy realm is that we wanted a place that was instantly familiar to gamers, and also one that offers us near-limitless opportunities for new and exciting types of friends and foes. Like the evolving worlds of Warcraft, Starcraft, and Diablo that we helped to build over the years, we're creating a new place that we believe you'll want to visit over and over. As far as gameplay, if you like a solo game, you'll find quests intended just for you. If you're more of a small team player, or the kind who likes to join up with a casual group on the fly, you can do so in Guild Wars. And if you favor the idea of the massive quests and long-term challenges, conquering the world, planting your guild flag on the castle, you have those opportunities as well. And because your character is persistent, and because we're not breaking the worlds into shards, servers, or realms, you can play from anywhere in the world with anyone in the world. Another concern of today's gamers is cheating. Nothing spoils a game more than a ruined economy brought about by a cheesy exploit. Guild Wars has been designed to avoid this problem. Using technological advances that stream content right onto your computer, you'll have the newest version of Guild Wars every single time you log on. This, in turn, allows quick resolutions of exploits and cheats, while giving us a chance to provide regular updates, like adding in seasonal elements or giving tournament winners special status in the game, a crown, a banner, a trophy. In many online games, you're forced to deal with player killers whether you want to or not. In Guild Wars, the way you play will be your choice alone. If you wish to engage in cooperative quests and fight against the world's monsters or the elements of nature, it will be up to you. If you want to engage in a one-on-one duel or hook up for a team-versus-team game, you can make that choice too. Backstabbing won't leave you with a dead character and a stripped corpse. As gamers ourselves, we wanted to make a great game that had real replayability and real immersiveness while not charging people a fee. So, Guild Wars will have no monthly fees in North America and will offer a variety of pricing options for gamers in other parts of the world. The guys who started the Guild Wars team have built excellent reputations in the games industry. Patrick Wyatt, Mike O'Brien, and Jeff Strain, while with Blizzard Entertainment, collectively racked up more than 17 years as key figures behind such blockbuster series as Warcraft, Starcraft, and Diablo, not to mention one of the world's most successful gaming networks, Battle.net. They've assembled a cadre of other passionate game developers, and collectively they're working to create a game that you'll play every chance you get. When I first heard about Guild Wars in early 2005, it was different from anything else on the market. It still is. Guild Wars 2 will be a huge letdown to a lot of people if it turns out to simply be just another MMO. That's not what Guild Wars is. Let the other guys do that. Guild Wars is above all that, because it is different. And if the creators lose sight of that, well, I think that is what will screw up the game more than anything else. So today, instead of telling you what I think is wrong about Guild Wars, I hope I have shed some light on some of what is so right about it. And maybe through that, we can look forward to seeing much more of the glory that is Guild Wars, rather than an empty, hollow game by the same name. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street.
So now I'm going to read over a PvP rant sent in to me by Slash on the forums, also known by his PvP handle as Generic. He sent this in to me before I even decided that I was going to make this into a rant episode, but his segment actually is one of the things that convinced me to do this episode this way. He asked me to read it instead of him recording it, which I told him, you know, that was just fine because I was so desperate to get his PvP expertise on the show. So, here we go. Hi everyone, this is Generic, and welcome to this episode's PvP segment. I feel quite honored to be chosen from the short list of very eligible applicants to talk about PvP on the show. Me killing all the others who wanted to do this segment has nothing at all to do with it. Honest. Now, before we get into the segment, I feel like I need to have a little disclaimer. Anet has made a great game, and overall, it's now fairly balanced and enjoyable compared with the other MMOs out there. Some of the other games out there have PvP that's like, amazing, I'm lagging so bad I can't even hit that guy. Wow, I need to do PvP for another 3 years before I can play. Wow, I have to pay a monthly subscription to a guy who got his armor off eBay. Okay, now I begin my rant. To begin with, I'm going to talk a little bit about the bane of our lives. That's right. Hero artificial intelligence, or lack of, in some situations. Now, I do a fair amount of hero battles, and the biggest issue that I have is dropping connections and stupid heroes. We're not talking about run-of-the-mill, simply unintelligent. We're talking about the three villages that have lost their idiots, and these villages are before the Axe Bend. You would expect everyone to have self-preservation near the top of their priority list, but not so with heroes. They tend to do all manner of things to wind up dead. I'll just run through my top favorites. Number 3. You flag a Ranger Paragon hero to a shrine location on the map. The hero runs toward it. Your opponent shadow prisons in and spikes your shrine capper out. Even though it would take no time to activate lightning reflexes, your hero doesn't. Even though he could attempt to save himself with whatever self-heals you put on his bar, they don't. Instead, your hero limps away, hoping to make it to that flag location and dying horribly in the process. Number 2. You are going 4v4 at the cultist shrine, and the other team starts to spike down your monk. Your monk dies, and you realize that your secondary healer is standing off to one side, casting a 3-5 second spirit or doing something equally useful, such as making daisy chains. And the number one thing is you notice your opponent's hex and realize you are about to get spiked. You target yourself and click on Dunkoro's Shield of Regeneration icon to protect you. Let me illustrate for a second what it would be like if you could talk directly to your heroes for the next few moments. Hey Dunkoro, I need an SOR on one.
I don't have Signet of Rejuvenation.
I'm about to get spiked. Look, just cast the first skill on your bar at me.
Well, okay then, if you insist, but I'm not doing anything until you say the magic word.
Good grief, Dunkoro, please cast now.
Well, okay then, but since I don't like your tone either, I'm going to sit here for another second while the skill usage animation plays on my bar. But I won't really cast anything.
That's it. I hate you, Dunkoro.
Hey, that's weird. I somehow cast it on myself. How did that happen?
Dunkoro, it has something to do with the fact that I'm already dead. Now that example gives an idea of one of the flaws in Hero AI. Even when micromanaging heroes, you can sometimes click a skill on their bars, then the activation ripple animation will show, but then they won't do anything for the next few seconds, even if you're not lagging. Sometimes this is merely frustrating. Other times, it's fatal. Going off topic a little bit, Hero AI also affects PvE as well. Many people load hero-proof builds onto their skill bars. Since spending a lot of time in hero battles nowadays, I just micromanage some of the skills that heroes can't use correctly. Even then, things can go wrong. I run three Elementalist Mesmers, that's E/ME. I bring Savannah Heat and Arcane Echo. Now, when facing a mob, what I do is activate Arcane Echo on all three, then select a random monster in the mob and cast Savannah Heat, hit Tab, and cast the next Savannah Heat, Tab, and then cast the next one. Then I repeat with the echoed copy as well, making sure to spread the death, destruction, and mayhem. Sometimes, however, this does not go according to plan, as after casting Arcane Echo, one of your heroes gets an idea that casting Fire Attunement at that moment would be a really great thing to do. Well done, Vec, top of the class. Now you have two copies of Fire Attunement. If only those enchantments stacked. Moving the topic along, though, I wanted to talk a little bit about the PvP ladders. Hero battles included, but mostly the guild ladder. I'll start with a quote from someone named Sunny. Examining the ladder this morning, I'm annoyed at the number of idle guilds just taking up space. How many dead guilds are there that were never disbanded? How many smurfs does any one team need? Instead of treating the ladder like a guild landfill, I'd like to make a personal request to everyone to try to remove a few of these guilds or recycle them to scrubs. End quote. It's always funny to see a rank 1000 guild or hero battle player having more qualifier points than those in the top 100. ArenaNet should introduce some way for the inactive guilds to slip quietly off the ladder, out of sight and out of mind, and allow new guilds or players up to take their places. Following in the footsteps of Lady Sinea, I would like to give my own complaint about the way the Hall of Monuments works, and also again vent my frustration over the way the PvP reward system has been handled. I would have expected that my PvP reward armor would be able to be carried over into Guild Wars 2, which is worth more than regular armor due to the insane amount of time and skill that's required. Sadly, yet again, PvP characters are left out in the metaphorical cold, and have no way of accessing the Hall of Monuments. No magical gate leading from the Great Temple of Balthazar, nothing. Just a big fat we don't give a damn from ArenaNet. I would have also expected them to add the new armors and weapons to the rewards menu a little faster. Months later, it seems like it's way down on their priority list. Now for this next segment, Generic also conducted an interview with an experienced PvPer. He goes by the handle of Plum in-game, and has been playing Guild Wars since early beta. I did this to help give an idea on what PvP used to be like, as opposed to what it is like now. And to cut a long conversation short, the interview has been condensed down into the key points, and I quote, "When Guild Wars was first released, people could not PvP until they had basically finished the PvE side of the game. By the time I arrived at Halls, there was of course a few players who were there already, as they had just rushed through the game in a very short space of time. The first sigil that I got from winning Halls was worth around 100k. The metagame back then was created by the guild Sissy Boys with the guild tag SB. And that guild introduced the use of Vent for a spike in Guild Wars. Their skills for the spike was Chain Lightning and Lightning Strike, because
There was no observer mode back then, so it became the first real meta by simply beating teams, and then those teams copying. The gameplay back then had a lot of things that would be considered exploits. Ghostly heroes did not cap unless standing in the direct center on altar matches, so the team used to just stand a player in that spot, effectively body blocking the ghostly hero. It was far easier to do back then, and they have fixed that exploit since. Another needed improvement was when they prevented respecking attributes mid-game, and later the swapping of armor to change runes. By changing attributes this way, teams were able to be far more flexible than should be possible. Players could add one or two defensive skills onto a bar and then change all of their attributes to max out those particular abilities when they had control of the altar. Combined with a massively overpowered and pre-nerfed healing seed, teams could sometimes hold for up to 30 to 40 times in a row. The corridors leading to the main chamber were also a lot narrower, and back then players found out that they could simply spam Ranger spirits in the corridors to block them. This was when you could have multiple copies of the same spirit up at the same time. Needless to say, though, ArenaNet nerfed that eventually. PvP used to be a lot more fun and exciting. There are so many rules nowadays. PvP was more free. Sure, there were broken builds, but there will always be broken builds. ArenaNet took way too long to nerf things that should have been nerfed, but they seem to just nerf whatever wins nowadays. Ai Wei is a good example of a skill that ArenaNet left alone far too long. Ai Wei was mostly a fame farming build. It didn't win halls all that much, but was easy fame for those running it. No skill required, just grab the Ai Wei bar, a few pugs, and go. It was so powerful that even builds designed specifically to beat it struggled. And the player who ran it gained huge amounts of fame and the ability to run warrior, but little else. GVG matches back then were a lot longer as well, with most games going on around the 30-minute mark. Some of the main differences back then were, like, it was a lot easier to gank the opponent's guild lord, and the guild lord also died a whole lot faster. Nowadays, it seems like GVG is the only thing left that relies mostly on skill instead of overpowered builds. A big issue that we have now is that a lot of the good players from early Guild Wars days have left the game or sold their accounts. It was partly the lack of rewards for doing PvP. Since sigils didn't stay at 100k forever, and PvPers for the most part are quite poor. The game also got stale. People got sick of doing the same old maps over and over again. I don't believe that ArenaNet has innovated enough when it comes to PvP. Another issue is the grind that PvPers are subjected to. Getting a single PvP title maxed out is virtually impossible by a single person. It takes a monumental effort. Liloth is considered to be one of the most famous HAers, i.e. one of the players with the most fame, as he was first to get rank 12. That was because his entire family plays on his account to get fame. The people I know who are rank 12 played for more than 12 hours a day. End quote. Generic would also like to thank Plum yet again for agreeing to an interview, and those who disagree with anything that was said in that last section will be rank spiked by Plum's Tiger. The last part of this PvP segment is going to focus on the Balthazar point system and the rewards for it. ArenaNet has designed a workable system for players to unlock new abilities, armor, and weapon mods. But this gets to a point in every PvPer's life that there is nothing left to unlock, nothing to spend those previously sought-after points on, apart from virtually worthless tournament tokens. At the same time, a glaring gap in the PvP armor menu is the lack of armor color customizations. All PvPers are given the choice of 8 colors for armor, and that's it. No mixing, no shades of gray, just 8 simple colors and the weak suggestion of go make a PvE tune. These said PvE tunes require far too much maintenance to have more than one or two able to play in PvP. With builds and armor requirements constantly changing, they are a sinkhole for gold that will never return. I would rather spend the time PvPing than wasting it farming for gold that is basically thrown away.
It would be nice if ArenaNet offered a system where you can unlock different shades of color in exchange for a large amount of Balthazar faction. With the more valuable colors, such as black and maybe smoking hot pink, costing tens of thousands of faction, and basic shades of gray costing a mere 1,000. If they based it on a similar system to the reward points, unlocking enough in a lower tier of colors would grant access to the next level of cooler looking dye. While this solution deals with the poor PvP dye system, it's only a temporary fix on the pointlessness of Balthazar at higher levels, or players not feeling rewarded for time and skill that is involved in PvP. This is why I propose that ArenaNet introduces a new option to the Priest of Balthazar. In a similar manner to gaining tournament tokens, simply cash in 1,000 factions in exchange for 100 gold. It's not great money considering the amount of time it takes to gain 1,000 faction, but it's better than doing nothing with your supposed PvP rewards. Heck, even Kurzik and Luxon faction can be cashed in for amber and jade chunks. Why not Balthazar faction for something that makes it feel like ArenaNet actually cares about what I do? This PvP segment was brought to you by Generic PvP. And if anyone from ArenaNet is listening, he humbly requests that you throw him an invite to the Guild Wars 2 beta. He will then stop harassing Izzy. He swears. I really hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed making it. It's always fun to just let go of that constant butt-kissing that I do for this game and just, you know, let loose. Lady Snail likes to tease me about the love fest that I have when a new chapter or expansion comes out, but at that time, it's genuinely what I feel. You know, I really love when a new expansion comes out or a chapter. I don't usually like to nitpick the negatives, but every once in a while, you know, a person just needs to collect all these bad points up, things that, you know, you're noticing throughout the game while you're playing it here and there, and just make a rant show about it. Don't get me wrong, though. I still love this game. Despite, you know, the tone that I had during this entire episode, I still love this game. I still play this game every single day, almost. And even if it's just a few minutes here and there to check up on stuff, I'm still here. So, if you'd like to contact me, it's Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com. Lady Sinea is Lady Sinea, L-A-D-Y-S-I-N-A-E-A, at gmail.com. The website is at www.guildcast.com, where we have some lovely forums for you to prance about. Also, be sure to check out Brent's site and podcast over at virginworlds.com, especially the Podcast Collective, where I'm slowly but surely taking over. And until next time, be sure to tell your f***ing friends and your f***ing guildmates about guildcast.com.